if I want to buy a ton of units, what's the best way to get into real estate? Like, well, I can market, I can sell. Why don't I go out there and start to find a way to control deal flow? And so I'm starting with the motivated seller side of thing, right? Having them come in to my funnels, into my follow-up systems, and then working on developing an investor list, getting to know what they're doing, and then going from there. So that's kind of how we got here.
Mic check.
I'm good.
Mic check.
You can read about success all day long, but if you don't put in the work, the mindset, execution, and the hustle behind your vision, it just remains a dream.
When everything goes wrong, you have to take all the responsibility.
We uncover what high-level entrepreneurs, business owners do to rise up from hustling daily.
So do what you feel passionate about. Take chances.
The world becomes your library to help you become better at your craft.
Join me as I share with you actionable tips to help you grow your business, learn skills, and help you level up in your self-development journey.
Your number one spot for business and personal growth is the Online Hustlers Podcast with your host, Esteban Andrade. Every day I'm hustling.
All right. Thank you for everyone that is listening to this episode of the Online Hustlers Podcast. Today we have a special guest. His name is Nick Robbins. You're not family of Tony Robbins. You just told me Uncle T. Uncle T is not. It's not your family, but you've been on his, on his things that he does, mm-hmm. amazingly changing people's lives. And you also share that you were part of that as well. Mm-hmm. But you come from the agency world, mm-hmm. and you've made amazing achievements. You have achieved a few things in the agency world, and also helping people in the healthcare industry, right? Doctors, mm-hmm. Over 1,000 clients that you've had yep. already. And these people essentially go into a transformation where you help them go from not making consistent money or making some money or not making money at all into like really transforming their business with marketing and sales and supporting them with done-for-you solutions as an agency owner. Now doing over $15 million overall. Mm. And I've seen your background in your wall whenever we do Zoom calls. You have these ClickFunnels awards, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And that's when you pass $10 million mm-hmm. with a funnel, mm-hmm. right? So you come with an amazing background in the agency space, but now you find yourself actually going to start from scratch in the wholesaling game, right? Like you found something in real estate, and I'd love to discover that in real estate wholesaling. That is a unique opportunity after doing so many years in the agency game that, you know, some people may see it also as an opportunity. Some people may see it as something like, oh, maybe this guy's doing a mistake. Wholesaling is hard. It sucks balls or things like that. I'm not able to like even close a deal a month. Like I'm struggling so much, and this guy's coming from the agency space. But I want to say that it's not really that different. Like if you acquire marketing skills, sales skills, and a plug and play system that comes in any economic, you're able to do this. So I want to hear from you, man. First of all, like who are you? Tell us a little bit of your achievements and how you were able to achieve that. Mm-hmm. Now your trip, your journey to real estate.
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, thanks for having me, man. Super excited to be here. But really my journey, I mean, it got started a long time ago, but about 8 years ago, I actually used to work in professional sports. I worked in the NBA and the NFL, and that's how I learned to hustle. Because, you know, if you can imagine, I worked on the sales side. I wasn't actually I wasn't playing out there, but it was very military boiler room-esque. Basically, if there was any quiet in the room, people were like drill sergeants yelling around. Just imagine what a bunch of mid-20-year-old guys would be testosterone-filled in the sales room for an NFL team, right? And that taught me how to actually grind and work, and it taught me how to sell. Because I worked for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I don't know if you're a football fan or not, but I'm sure some people listening would be. And I was there the years that they had MRSA, that they went 0-14. And if you think selling doctors or convincing someone to, you know, sell their house is hard, try selling to a pissed off football fan in the South overpriced tickets to a very hot stadium when they think it's your fault that the team's 0-14.
Yeah.
So I learned early on how to sell from that regard, right? But then one day, I was number one on the sales team for the Buccaneers, and I still have this actually framed today. I got a W-2 $43,000, number one sales rep for an NFL franchise, including commissions.
In 1 month?
And no. And that was the year. Oh. That was the entire year.
Yeah.
I quit 2 weeks later. And wow. I moved to Utah and started the online agency. No idea what I was doing. Knew nothing about digital marketing. But I had a friend out there who was like, I need sales. I know how to do SEO, right? And long story short, we grinded hard in the agency space, ended up working in a very specific niche with the doctors, worked with over 1,000, like you said. We've done probably over $18 million in revenue in the last, you know, 5 years, 6 years, something like that, in regards to working with them, helping them make a ton more money. And through that, I developed some skill sets, marketing, sales, that type of stuff. But what I really learned was how to actually take a customer and take them from where they are to where they want to go. And so what I mean by that specifically is, what is really taking place when you're selling? Because at first, when I was selling doctors, that was one thing. Hey, here's how you make more money. But then it actually got to us turning into teaching the doctors how to sell patients. And when you know how to sell a doctor on how to make more money, and you also know how to sell a patient cash medicine on how to invest $5,000 in to fix their knee for stem cell, for example, you start to see patterns, right? And through this time, I also had an agency consulting business where I worked with a lot of other agency owners who were working with every niche imaginable, right? Mainly local businesses, but, you know, plumbers, roofers, HVAC. And I started to see frameworks and similarities across the board. And everything was great. Agency model's awesome. But I came across a book by Naval Ravikant. I don't know, do you know Naval?
Yes.
Yeah. So his book, The Almanac of Naval, changed my life. And in there—
How long ago did you read it?
That was late 2021.
Late 2021.
So right around this time, there's actually several things that happened in late 2021 that led me to where I am right now. I had a conversation with Alex Becker. You know Alex Becker?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a conversation and I was at one of his masterminds and we were talking about crypto and money and leverage and the power of leverage, really. And then I read the book, The Almanac Naval, and in there he talks about leverage, right? And there's four forms of leverage: capital, labor, media, and code. And I started thinking about the leverage I had with the agency and I'm like, man, I don't have a ton of leverage here because clients would churn out. They're the ones making the huge chunks of money, right? Yes. Because we have clients with us who paid us $500,000 over 4 years and they've made $20 million.
Yeah.
So I realized I had two options. I either start buying practices and going that route, partnering with them, or I look for another vehicle that I can attach the sales and marketing skills to. Because at this point, I'd helped marketing for every niche imaginable, right? So all kinds of paid ads, things like that. And then fast forward a few months later, basically, so I sold my agency in July of 2022, and we were planning on traveling and going to see the world. And I just did some consulting for a few months. And then early this year, my wife actually got diagnosed with cancer. Right. And so that was obviously a tough blow. She's healthy. She's 31 years old. She's in good shape. You never see that type of stuff coming. Again, started thinking about leverage a lot. And one thing that I did that was really smart back in 2020, apparently our government leaders couldn't see inflation coming, but I could see it from 4,000 miles away, right? Like, I feel like most people could. So I started buying properties, and I've also bought too much crypto, but I started buying a lot of properties back then, right? And so, I mean, I bought 7 units, okay?
Yeah.
Over from 2020 to end of 2021.
With regular financing?
Yeah, all 20% down, 25% down. I was just throwing, because I've been saving war chest for a while. So I just started putting 25% down, buying rates. Everything is sub 4%. All my loans. And that's really hard to do for investor loans, right? Because they're typically more expensive.
Yeah.
And circling back to this year, after my wife got diagnosed with cancer, I really slowed down, thought about leverage, and I started actually evaluating my returns for those 7 units over the last 2 years. And I started calculating everything. The cash flow, the depreciation, the appreciation that took place, tax benefits, everything along those lines. And I started realizing that some of these things had disgusting returns, like wild, crazy returns.
Yeah.
And I looked at myself, I was like, I need 1,000 units. Like, that's what I got to do. This is going to be my compounding vehicle, right? Because I wanted to create leverage.
1,000 single families or?
Just 1,000 units. It's starting with single families. I have a duplex right now, but I definitely want to get into multifamily.
Okay.
Right. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, okay, if I want to buy a ton of units, what's the best way to get into real estate? Like, well, I can market, I can sell. Why don't I go out there and find a way to control deal flow? And so I'm starting with the motivated seller side of thing, right? Having them come in to my funnels, into my follow-up systems, and then working on developing an investor list, getting to know what they're doing, and then going from there. So that's kind of how we got here.
Okay. So why did you decide to go that way? I know you gave me a little bit of explanation. And you had such a huge expertise in the medical space and with doctors and being able to partner up with one of your clients or buy one of your clients off or just have your own. Like, why was it a better idea to do wholesaling and leverage wholesaling rather than, like, for example?
It's a great question. And I've spent enormous amounts of time thinking about this. Enormous. Because not only did I have, because one thing that's powerful, when you learn how to market, you learn how to sell, and you learn how business works, because I can also play with numbers and fundamentally, like, improve profit margins across the board with businesses. It's like, where do you attach it? And so I've spent a ton of time thinking about that. Do I want to go down the AI route? Do I want to build on the blockchain? Two things I strongly believe in. AI is already here and taking over, as I know you know, right? And the same thing with medical. People are getting older. They're getting sicker. They have more money. I had opportunities. There's a guy in Sarasota across the state from us, one of my close friends. We talked about opening practices together. He's already doing multiple eight figures with his practice, just crushing it. And I ended up on real estate because I see wholesaling as really just like the level one, right? Level one, get my skin in the game, get used to it. Yes, I brought properties before, but I didn't really pay attention. I just shotgun bought them. I was just like, fuck it, let's go. We're all first time ever buying. Let's just buy two, same day. Yeah. Like, that's literally
what I did.
Use
an agent. You trust
me. I use a turnkey company at the time, right? And the math looked to make sense, and it has made sense over time. But I didn't know anything. I signed the documents. I didn't even read them. I was just like signing it. But if I'm looking out 10 years from now, and I'm thinking about like what AI is going to disrupt, what's going to take place, like I know I want to hold hard assets. That's really what it came down to. I think it's going to be longer before AI takes over the hard asset game, basically plumbing, roofing, real estate, than anything that can be done on a computer, for example. Right? As a marketer, as someone who understands what's going on with AI, like, if you don't get up to speed on it, you're going to be eaten for breakfast, right? Because it's going to replace everything you do. It's going to replace salespeople. It's going to replace everything. I think it's going to be a little bit longer until it replaces the plumber or the roofer.
100%.
And so I want to start with real estate as just a level one, but I see this as really a 3 to 5 year project to then start buying roofing, plumbing, renovation companies so that I can just start to build an empire from that way.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's how I see it. And wholesaling is really just to get some active income going, get some, my skin in the game, get some connections with things, and then also just control deal flow. And if I can control deal flow, meaning coming in, I can assign contracts and I can buy it myself. Right.
Yeah.
So like right now, my strategy is I most likely going to be assign 4 contracts, keep one, because I still want an end buyer and I still have capital to deploy. Right. When the good deals come across.
Have you ever seen, for example, people that have built things around real estate and multiple verticals, such as, let's say, a Ryan Pineda, who has multiple verticals within the real estate space, not only wholesaling, Pace Morby, who has multiple verticals. Wouldn't you consider that maybe, it seems like you're a visionary too, maybe instead of buying like roofing companies, you're getting into wholesaling, and you're going to master this, start doing lots of creative deals and stuff like that. I know that you're getting into a lot of those things and you're going to go deeper into it. Maybe building an entire vertical enterprise or a vertical group of companies within the real estate space will be a better play, or why still like thinking that, hey, a roofing company, HVAC company will be a good idea?
Yep, great question. And the answer is I'm not sure. Right. So the way I look at life and strategy and business is I want to be directionally correct. I want to have an idea of where I'm going, but I'm not sold on the exact step-by-step path to get there, because at the speed that things are changing, holy, things can change.
Yeah.
What I do know is I want to own more real estate, and I want to do that by getting my skin in the game and developing active income from it and then building from there, and also having access to deal flow. Because the way I see it is like, I just want to control deal flow all the way through. Like, I want to be the one who has the deals, whether I partake in them or I assign them to investors. Because the way I see it is, if you control the deal, then you're always going to have people coming to you and you're going to be able to raise money and capital and all that type of stuff, right? So I don't know. It's likely that I could see a huge opening in the space and start a software company or something with blockchain. Because I mean, blockchain, the easiest adaption for blockchain in the world is to put it in real estate. Like, there's like 47 parties to a real estate transaction, pretty much all of which could be replaced by the blockchain, because it's just fancy record keeping and ledger keeping. Now, we'd have to get governments on board, and it's going to take forever for that to actually be adopted, right? But I will be absolutely looking for that stuff. My goal is to be directionally correct tomorrow. I like to be think macro, but also be able to play in the micro.
Yeah, I have a friend that they build a blockchain-based real estate SaaS company. So what does that mean? They acquire real estate and they back it by the blockchain. So they're making sure that each property has the ability to be purchased by shares by their users, whoever uses that specific technology. It's called Rabbit House, something like that. So my friends, they developed this, and they're into the how do I make, obviously, make sure that our investors that are using Rabbit House, which is our app, can also make a good return and keep it at around 10, 14%. So they're using Airbnb exit strategies with all the properties that they acquire. And they're acquiring like multi-units. So 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 units at a time. And they're working it on Airbnb, but basically essentially raising capital through the app, right? So it's really interesting. And you also, as an user, you're also able to pull your money out because faster than just
that's what's so appealing,
it's
right?
Backed by the blockchain, which is really really cool. Just something to
No, I love that. I've seen that idea, and I think that's the future. Fractional. It also gives people who, I mean, one of my big passions in life is financial education. Really, education in general. I'm one of the biggest. I have a strong disgust for traditional education. I've learned so much more outside of it. I have a 4-year degree. It was shit. It's not worth anything, right? And financial education is so severely lacking in this country. And you can tell because, I mean, you could drop 100 people on the street and ask them the difference between APR and APY. No one's going to know. 99 out of 100 have no clue what you're talking about, right? And you can see this every day when people who carry debt and can carry consumer debt or do payday loans, things like that. So what I'm getting at there is access financial education to the mass is a huge passion of mine. It's a very long-term 10, 20-year vision to actually teach people about things like debt, returns, interest rates, money, math, how those things work. And so I love that idea of being able to make real estate investing open to the retail investor, right? Where our government is always trying to protect the retail investor, right? But it ends up screwing them, what I mean? So like, that's my opinion anyways. And so long-term, I would love to be able to share more information on that topic and help make real estate investing more accessible, investing in general, more accessible to
love
people.
That. All right, so let's talk about your journey that you're gonna start and that you're gonna take over here. Mm-hmm. So move forward. You're going to start, you're going to prepare on anything, you're going to prepare to essentially launch, right? Or because you don't have any assignment fee money right now, but you do have investments in real estate. What are your top priorities and things that you want to avoid as well, you know, as you launch this company?
Yep, great question. So number one thing I want to avoid is shiny object syndrome. I see it all the time. I look at it like internet marketing. Right. In regards to, I don't want to be selling multifamily one day, focusing on sub two the next, focusing on, you know, creative the next, focusing on cash here, trying to do land tomorrow. Right. So choose a niche, go on, spend time on that. Right. So that's one of the things I want to avoid, and because it's very easy to get shiny object, especially with YouTube these days. And, you know, we've got all these people out there, do this, no flip land, no, to like pick one. They're all going to make money from what I can see. Right.
Yes.
So I want to avoid that. And I really want to, what I'm focused on is then building the system and machine around it and being prepared to spend money to go acquire and monetize the lead. Because monetizing the lead has basically been my whole life for the last decade, right? Versus with doctors, with agencies, because I'm not afraid to go spend $3,000 to make 15, right? Or even to make 10 at the beginning, you know? And so I've really been focused on what the follow-up strategies are going to be, because I strongly believe that the place that most businesses leave money on the table is very poor follow-up. Doesn't matter what business it is, any business in the country, right? And with the motivated sellers, they might not be ready to sell right now. Maybe they just want to entertain a cash offer, right? But what if they're ready in 6 months, 12 months? I like to think long-term with that. I've really been able to orient my thinking to long-term thinking as opposed to just trying to make as much cash today. Obviously, I want to make cash right now, but I'm more about the long-term. So that's what I'm focused on. And the biggest thing, like I said, with avoiding is just shiny object syndrome and just staying focused.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you know that the leads are going to be able to entertain your principal offer, which is cash wholesale. And some of them will be ready in, you know, 6 months from today, 4 months, 6 months, whatever. But how are you preparing that during this economy, there's a lot of sellers, there's a lot of people that are uneducated, that are, you know, skeptical, but also they have houses that they couldn't really take care of, but they're not necessarily fit a cash offer even ever, because they are like just looking like mint condition, new, or like they recently purchased it. you, what's going to be your approach there, and how are you going to be preparing for, you know, encountering those type of seller leads?
Yeah. So if I'm putting my wholesaling hat on, right, not my end buyer hat, because I've got a couple different hats that I would wear. One of the first things that I'm doing, I'm actually in this process right now, is I'm looking for my dream 100. And what I mean by dream 100 in this particular aspect is finding the investor. And the investors are your clients. The house is the product, right? And so I'm looking to match the product with the investor. And so the way I'm approaching the investor is, hey, I'm your personal concierge. I'm your shopper. What's your bread and butter? Where do you want to be? Do you fix? Do you flip? Do you gut? Do you focus on wraps? What's your exit strategies? To create a Rolodex of exit strategies, of investors who have different exit strategies, so that when I get someone in the pipeline and in our conversation, filling out our intake forms as far as looking to sell their house, we identify a cash offer doesn't make sense, which we know is going to happen quite a bit, right? We can then explain and teach them the process about what else could be done, and then match it with the perfect client and buyer over here.
Okay. Right? So you'll 100% make sure that you qualify your buyers, acquire buyers, that whenever you find the opportunity for them, you will know that you have someone that will entertain that type of deal. Is that
100%?
Like,
yep. And I want to be able to move it quick, and I want them to know that I'm going to find them exactly what they're looking for, and I'm not going to waste their time with deals.
Yes.
Right. Because I'm treating them as the client. Like, the investor is the client, house is the product.
Yes.
Okay. Right. And one of the most inefficient markets of all time right now, ever and always, is real estate. And all businesses is finding arbitrage, right?
Yeah.
Opportunities between the two. And because of just, it's so inefficient because there's so many different exit strategies in different counties, and nothing's coordinated. It's not like the stock market.
Yeah.
Stock market, I'm not saying you can't make money trading. I have friends who do, but like, you're up against hedge funds and algorithms and all this stuff. The inefficiencies in the real estate market is massive.
Yes. And so how are you planning, for example, to decrease the deficiencies that you will have, let's say, following up with leads or ensuring that you maximize every single lead that you get right now? Like, what's that machine looking like?
Yeah, yeah. If I had a computer, it's pretty intense, right? So I'm obsessed with follow-up. I think follow-up is absolutely critical. And I watch this take place in my agency. I mean, to this day, the agency, I'm still like best friends with the owner. I still consult over there. They're closing deals that came in the pipeline 4 years ago. You know, and so what it looks like is, first and foremost, I want to basically, positioning is the first thing I think about here, because we know there's a lot of competition, right? Because if somebody is on a foreclosure list, or if they're on a probate list, like, everyone and their mom's calling, people are knocking on their doors, yada, yada, right? So first and foremost, I actually like getting the online generated leads, like what you do, right? Like, I want that because I want the person who's at least opted in, because it's just easier that way. And then from there, I'm going to position myself as an advocate for the seller. I'm not going to hard sell them. I'm not going to be hard closing them. It's going to be a seller advocate. It's like, hey, we're here to help you come to a solution, right? And so the way that I've actually constructed the follow-up process is, we're going to have our acquisition individual, and then we're going to have like a funding department, and they're going to be going back and forth. And the acquisition person is going to be the seller advocate. Right. And they're going to be, hey, I'm going to go to the funding department, right? Because this person's not, because he's not my, this guy actually my dad, but he's not going to be able to make decisions without coming back and talking to us. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when I learned this position, this strategy from a guy who I know is crushing it in the space, right? And I was like, huh, that makes sense, because it's so much different than what most wholesalers would do. And I also learned the importance of differentiation, targeting doctors with marketing, because I'm not sure that there is a more competitive, like, we think wholesaling is competitive. Like, try selling marketing to doctors. They're literally nonstop, 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
So I'm no stranger to competition. And I sold to chiropractors. You were in the agency world. How many people did that? You know what I mean? And so that's going to be looking at, first, that I need to differentiate. And then from there, I need to have an actual proper follow-up systems in place that are automated touch points, right? So we have a 12-month follow-up built into place, and it's going to keep re-going. So it'll be 12, then 24, et cetera, right? We're going to be super heavy in the first 2 weeks, and then there's going to be big follow-up afterwards.
Okay. So you come with a lot of experience, and let's say someone that wants to learn from you a few particular specific tactics on, for example, how does your follow-up will bit different than someone that is using like a CRM that has automations that you just put it there and then follow up with them right away, or create tasks in there? But like, how does it differentiate? You explained the way that your acquisition department and funding department will mm-hmm. you know, will work together and collaborate and stuff like that. But how does your system differentiate from other systems that exist out there that you've learned from this top guy?
Yeah, well, I can say with pretty strong confidence that most people don't have any type of follow-up system, especially a long-term one, right? Maybe the first couple of days, maybe the first couple of weeks, right? You've seen back end, like it just happens. Anyone watches is not like a bad thing. I just know that most businesses haven't taken the time to construct this.
Yes.
So first having one puts you in the top 10% because most people aren't going to do it. Why? Because it sucks to build. It's brutal, you know?
Yeah.
You have to put all these automations together, write all these emails and text messages, et cetera, right? And then from a differentiation standpoint, it really like, it's hard to give a direct answer here because you want to have congruency with how the lead is generated, right? And so our landing pages that we have, they match up with how our texting and our emails go and how we position ourselves.
Yes.
You know, and so we position ourselves again as the advocate. So it's hard to get like super black and white on that because it depends on where the lead's coming from.
Right.
Because if you are cold calling someone, you're going to have to position yourself a little bit differently than how I'm choosing to do it. Because I'm choosing to do it from an online lead generation standpoint because I want people to raise their hand. All this texting, cold texting and cold calling stuff. Like I ran cold call centers. They're brutal. I don't have a whole lot of interest in that. I know it works. I know it's huge and I know texting can still work. Although all these new laws that are coming into place are brutal.
You're coming with few leverages. You have some capital to put in here. What other leverages would you have right now?
I mean,
technology that you're putting together?
So one thing that, you know, helps a lot is I have extensive technology experience, how automations work, CRMs, sense of ad experience. I mean, we manage over $10 million in ad spend. You learn a few things, right? And it's not just with doctors. I ran ads to get doctors inbound, you know, which is also a very difficult thing to do. Then my wife was a media buyer. She worked with some of the biggest coaches in the world and has done people like Steven Larson's ads and like people like that from the ClickFunnels group, all that. So that's leverage. And having capital does help, right? And so it's basically like, do I want to pay for speed or do I want to spend time?
Yeah.
And I'm looking to pay for speed.
Yeah. Is your wife, I know that your wife had something going on at the beginning of the year, but is your wife going to be working with you on this?
She is. She's building right now. We just had chemo treatment number 4 2 days ago. And since we started chemo is when we launched the whole thing. We started building it after chemo treatment 1.
Because you knew it was going to solve it. I mean, she was going to get better. So, okay, let's start building something together.
We just assumed and acted as if, and it's given her something to do throughout this and focus on. And she actually had already got her real estate license last year. She's been interested in real estate for a while, more of the design and the house perspective. I don't care about that stuff.
Yeah.
I like the math and I like hard assets, but she likes the design and that type of thing from the renovation side. And so she's actually building the tech behind the scenes. And I just manage, run the copywriting, the sales teams, that type of stuff.
So she's the one building this machine.
She's the tech.
And you're the vision. Hey, it needs to have this. Let's make sure that's
how
this.
It works. Yeah, she makes sure the tech operates and sets up all those things, make sure it's all connecting and running properly.
She's
and
the she'll tech
do,
goddess.
Yeah, and she'll do the media buying as well. I'll write the copy and do the ads and the funnels and the videos.
Will this media buying will be to acquire buyers or to acquire
We're sellers? Actually looking at doing both. I'm not entirely sure where I want to go with that yet. Right now, we are going to do just simple outbound to the buyer, the client side. But we're definitely going to be paying for leads, paying for ads, whether it's ourselves or someone like you, some of the other lead generators out there to drop people into our system.
Yeah.
Because I'm confident in our ability to monetize anyone who raises their hand and says, I'm interested in selling my house.
And right now, how are you generating buyer clients so that you have your pipeline full?
Yeah. So we're going to start with outbound. We've got our text. We've got our scripts ready to go to reach outbound. In order to do that, Sub2 community has been great. I already have people I've connected with, like, I feel like if you get a good deal and you just post in there, people would probably buy it, right?
Yes.
So in some of those groups, and you know, I've got a friend who his dispo strategy is literally just Facebook Marketplace. He knows nothing, knows no buyers, nothing. He just gets them under contract, 60% ARV or less. He works in the Michigan, a few areas of Michigan, and just does Facebook Marketplace. You know,
that's all.
That's his dispo.
Emails or text.
Just Facebook Marketplace. 150 wholesales over the last 18 months. You know, and I'm just like, all right, that's a pretty good number. That's pretty good volume for.
Is it Detroit or?
It's outside Detroit. Yeah.
Wow. So he has no issue with this position in just in Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, and so I personally want to connect with investors because
100%.
One thing I've learned is if you want to be like in the room with people, get to know people or pay to be in the room, right?
Yeah.
So I've been paying for masterminds my whole life to get around people. And, you know, I have a very checkered past. We talked about this briefly before. A lot of drugs and alcohol were involved. And I know like we all hear this quote, like, you are who you hang out with through the average of five people. I have a very unique perspective on this because of who I hung out with in my, you know, late teens, early 20s, the sports group that I hung out with, and then now 7 to 8 figure entrepreneurs. And I know if I can get around 9 figure people, it's inevitable I get that.
Yeah. So obviously it seems like you've learned so much from your past business and getting into this new venture. What are the few things here you've talked about leverage, but are you going to move something from your previous business to use it in this business? Like, let's say, for example, some of the team members that you used to have. And I guess, are you gonna just focus on the one place that you could essentially be successful at the very beginning, which is your local market, or are you gonna expand nationwide?
Yep. So for the first question, I'm not gonna be bringing any team members right now. I love my team members. I love people that I've coached up and have worked with media buyers, but they're happy and they're in good spots with the current businesses. So right now I'm actually just bringing my dad. It's going to be the three of us getting started with this. My dad, my wife, and then me. He's going to be the acquisition specialist.
How'd you get your dad to be into
this? He's been real estate for 35 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so he's done creative. He's done all these deals. He actually just moved across the country from California to Florida to work on this. It's been kind of a dream of his and a lot in a sense of mine as well to be working together for 20 years ago we started.
Was he a realtor?
Yeah, I was a realtor.
Okay.
Yep. So he's a realtor. So he's had a lot of these conversations before, and he's going to be licensed over here, but he's not going to focus on that side if listings pop up from the motivated sellers, because that's an exit strategy too, right? If you have a real estate license, you get someone who wants to sell their house, maybe it's not good for a cash offer, but it's like, hey, why don't we list this thing? You can get close. Like, that's off. That's another potential exit strategy. And so we might have him list in some houses, things like that. He wanted to be over here. He wanted to be in Florida anyways. My brother graduated college, and so they just moved out here actually a couple weeks ago.
How are you converting a real estate agent for 35 years of experience into a wholesaling machine, mm-hmm. a creative acquisition machine?
Yep. So the good news is he's been around the creative side of things, and he doesn't think like a traditional realtor does. No offense to any realtors in here. Although it's a bunch of wholesalers.
So
I'm sure that most people realize how shitty they are. What's funny about that is, you know, I coach hundreds of agency owners, right?
Yeah.
And I always told people, don't work with realtors unless you are a real estate agent. You can teach them how to sell and how to can put on their tie their shoes in the morning and actually do some shit, right? Because most realtors aren't actually realtors. They know a couple people, they sell a couple houses a year, right? And they don't really understand the game, and that's okay. I call them the knucklehead crew, because I'm like, you don't want to work with them, right? But I love, there are great ones out there too. I've learned any profession, most people suck. It's just kind of how it is. But fortunately, he's been in, you know, Carlton Sheets and Robert G. Allen, and he's been familiar with this creative and in this type of world for a long time. He's done sub-2 deals way like 2002, like 20 years ago. He's done creative financing, seller deals. So he's already understands and gets it. So I won't have to do much change in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
He's already got the right mindset for
it. Yeah, that's good. Yep. And so your first few months or year, will you stay local to the market?
Yeah. So on that question, yes. So right now we're actually looking at some local, all South Florida stuff. In other words, basically, I want to be in Florida.
Yeah.
Right. I own none of my properties right now are in Florida. I'm in North Carolina, Alabama, and Missouri right now for our properties. But again, looking back to what I brought up before about thinking 10 years into the future, I want to own property here for a lot of reasons. I think that it's going to continue. We're already seeing a max exodus. All you got to do is look at, you know, the U-Haul cost to get to here from California. I'm from California and all that stuff. It's bad over there. Like, everything, people might not think it's bad, but San Francisco is brutal.
Yeah.
In Miami, where we are, beautiful. It's amazing. You drive in here, it's clean, it's awesome. So I just want to own in South Florida. I think there's a huge development opportunity down here. And plus, we can go touch the house, you know, if we need to.
Yeah. Like, literally physically go to the property.
Exactly. And eventually you want to be virtual, right? Like, I get that. I understand scaling, but there's nothing wrong with, you know, especially for me, because I don't have the eye to go look around and be like, oh, there's the crack. I can't just walk through a house and estimate the repair.
Not
cost,
yet.
Right? Not yet. Not yet. Yeah. I'll be able to, or at least my wife and my dad will. I don't know how much I'll be getting into that.
What's your
stuff,
plan to kind of get used to, like, seeing properties on pictures and things like that?
Yeah. So my dad's been doing it for a long time, so that helps. And then my wife's really interested in that stuff.
Now, would you wear the on the field hat, or will you always be on the back, you know, behind the scenes as a CEO?
I will likely not be too much involved with any type of design or property repair. I find that highly unlikely. I am, when it comes to doing shit with my tool, with tools in my hands, like that's not a skill set I have. I can talk and I can sit behind a computer. I can do that, you know? I was trying to fucking put air pressure in our tires the other day, and I actually accidentally took all the damn air pressure out. I was like, it's like literally didn't put it on there. Like, that's how bad I am with that stuff. Right. But my dad is handy. And
digital marketers into real estate.
Yeah. Wow. So I will be more on the data, but I do love spreadsheets and I love numbers and I love math and I love projections. And so I will get competent at being able to understand what we're looking at from a repair cost standpoint, but I'm more of the projections guy, the front end type of guy, that type of stuff. And my wife has an eye for design and really loves it, loves nice homes. And my dad knows how to at value add, right? Because he's owned multifamily before too. So he's owned big apartment complexes, things like that.
Are you open to share how you're going to structure your team as you grow and how you're structuring it right now compared to like how you think that you're going to be structuring as you hire?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Right now, essentially, there's three of us. My role is going to be basically overseeing our lead machine, or basically our conversion machine, the monetization machine, both helping Sema, that's my wife's name, with the ad buying, the creative, the copy, or working with the lead generators that we work with, as well as working with my dad as he works through the machine that we built in Airtable, which is basically all the follow-up stages and sends off all the triggers and the text messages and the follow-up call breakdowns with him. So kind of oversee that type of stuff. And then also I'll have a lot of relationships with the end investors, right? The buyers, that type of stuff. And think about the exit strategies. My dad's going to be focused on intake, basically our intake paperwork, the forms people fill out in order to get a cash offer from us. And then working with them as a seller advocate and then locking up the contract and then making sure the details and the transaction and paperwork is done correctly. Sema is going to be, and he's also going to be a deal evaluator, basically helping determine the exit strategy. What's the ARV, you know, what's the MAO, that type of stuff. And then him and Sema will be on that. I'll be in that a little bit too, but, and then Sema is going to be media buyer and basically just tech.
Okay.
And then from there, we would hire an intake specialist first, the person who gets them to say yes and fill out our intake paperwork in order to qualify for a cash offer. And then, you know, have my dad just lock up contracts. And then from there, we'll see where it goes, you know, with AI. And I don't know if you've been messing around with auto GPT and stuff like that. Like, oof.
Auto GPT, no.
Yeah. Google, just go look up agent GPT and auto GPT after this. It's chat GPT, but times like a billion.
Really?
We won't go too deep into here, but they're autonomous agents. It's basically you can put people in endless loops. Like I can build robots to go out there and literally scrape data for me 24/7, 365. And it's crazy what they're doing out there.
Wow.
Yeah. And so who knows? We don't even need more employees, right? Because part of this, like, I want to see where it goes. I don't necessarily anticipate making a $100 million wholesale company, right? Because that would be pretty hard to do. And that's not quite what this is for. This is kind of a level one into just getting a ton of properties, right? Basically, I'm going to use it as leverage to get a bunch of properties. And then from there, potentially start raising money, right? Because I have a little bit of a following in the online marketing side. And I already have people who, you know, in the internet marketing niche, you're like, dude, you're getting a real estate? Let me know. I got cash. Let's send it over, right? Because a lot, you know, online marketers often have a bunch of cash and don't know what the hell to do with it. Yeah. You know,
Are you planning to have, apart from Sub2, which is a lot, other mentorships or strategic partnerships or just anyone that you would reach out to or mastermind or something? You're planning to join any of that?
Definitely. I've spent over $500,000 on masterminds and coaching programs for years. Best investment ever, right? I have no regrets on any of that. And so 100%.
Who have you seen around there that it's kind of someone that would fit as your mentor that would be
in real estate?
Yeah.
So right now there's Sub2 is what I'm going to focus on. And there's another one is from Ryan Fletcher, and it's called the Partner Program. And so basically it's a smaller group over there. And he's where some of the positioning stuff I was talking about before came from. So I don't know if you know him, but he's a smaller, it's not like as big as Sub2 because he doesn't want it to be necessarily. Yeah. He has different end game goals, but there. And then I'm always just going to keep my eye out for what's open. One thing too, I also don't want to get too caught up with stuff when it comes to things, so I like to only have a couple at a time because then again it gets into that niche hopping thing.
100%.
And the Sub2 community alone, love pace, but you go in there and it's just like you're just blitzed, man. It's just, it reminds me, like, imagine an online marketing school. It's like, hey, come learn online marketing, and then it's like this hour we're going to do affiliate, and then we're going to do ClickBank, and then we're going to do e-commerce, and then we're going
to
do...
I feel like something that Subtu should do is build a client journey for each person that, depending on where you are, because there's so many different client journeys now.
It's the course is I love the community. The people have been amazing. I mean, that's part of how we connected. I saw you were doing this. I'm like, wait a minute, I know this guy, you know? And
then I was a little bit fatter in that.
Yeah, looking good, man. I see the protein shakes over here, you know? But yeah, it's amazing community, and there's so much good content there. There's just so much that if you're brand new, like I was thinking about this, like I've been experienced, you know, I know a little bit about business, right? I've got to experience a lot of things. And if I, like, I'm overwhelmed, I mean, man, someone who's brand new is going to be like,
holy.
Yeah.
Yes.
But on the flip side, any answer you could ever need is in there too, you know? And I know that if I get, like, I'm so confident that if I got a property that was a good deal, like all it would take is a post or two in Discord and Facebook, and you'd be able to get rid of it.
That makes sense.
You know, as long as it's not in some
Discord
market or something. Yeah. Discord is wild, bro.
That turned off those notifications.
But I love what Pace is doing. And he brought me into, he's the one who like started convincing me. I was watching a lot of him when my wife got sick, or when she were going through medical tests all day, every day. And he really got me thinking about real estate in a different way. So I really owe him for that. And I can't wait to see where it goes. I love being a part of the community, because I started thinking, because it's such a pain in the ass to get loans. Like one of the, I don't even want to go around. It was such a pain in the ass to get loans, right? Yeah. As someone who, as an entrepreneur, it's so hard. You know, and I'm just like, dude, guys, like I can buy this house several times over in cash, and you have access to my bank accounts, and here's my W-2s. Why do you need the P&Ls for the last 45 years? And why is this taking so fucking long?
Yeah.
And the underwriters didn't know how to read a K-1. At one point, I could tell horror stories about loan people. I'm like, if your job is to identify risk in borrowers, like you're really missing here, you know, by taking so long to get it going. So anyways, anyone who's ever tried to get a loan, or with, you know, I don't know if you have
as
with,
an entrepreneur.
Yeah, as an entrepreneur, it's just brutal. I mean, especially if, you know, you don't have several years worth of W-2s. And even then, when I was getting loans, it was during the pandemic, so they were even tighter and scrutiny. It was just a pain in the ass.
Yeah. I'm surprised you were able to get, what, 7 properties?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Around. I mean, it wasn't easy. Like, I had the fortunately, you know, the financial backing and capital and bank accounts in order to support it.
You think as an agency owner, was it worth it to get into the turnkey element of, like, buying?
You know, yes, I do. I could have done a lot better. There was 2 properties in particular that I should have understood how to read an inspection report better.
A what? Sorry.
An inspection report.
Inspection report.
Yep. Because I basically, like, one of them, I immediately had to fix the HVAC, and it was 14 years old. I'm like, I probably should have seen that, you know? So that was stupid on me. So I made some mistakes, right? But I'm glad that I put my money in a vehicle that compounds leverage, because the dollar has dropped, what, 40% in the last year? It's, I mean, we've printed 40% more money in the last 2 years. Like, inflation's through the roof. I mean, it costs fucking $11 for a package of bacon right now. It's fucking outrageous, right? And putting that money in real estate, one, it gives me cash every month, and that continues to grow as the rents increase. And, you know, I'm getting debt pay down. I have locked in mortgage, and I'm very excited that I have such good fixed debt. Because the debt itself that I have is an asset on its own.
Yeah.
You know, sub 4% loans for 30 years is an asset by itself, right? So I think it's a great place to go, but I also don't think that it is fully passive, and you should probably know a little bit about what's going on.
Right? Why not?
Because I just, dealing with, even when you have property managers, like stuff breaks and things come up, and you know, you have to keep the insurance, and you know, there's little things you have to do. It's not like it's a hard job or takes a ton of time or anything, but I wouldn't say that it's like fully passive. I also wouldn't do it if, like, you were dependent on your cash flow, the net profit cash flow and your investment to survive. I feel for those families, those people, and I know that these gurus are out there as like, come invest and, you know, take your 9 to 5, and they take their last 25 grand and they put it down in a property, and then, you know, they're making $400 a month, and then all of a sudden, bam, plumbing goes out and you got a $3,000 bill.
Yeah.
You don't have anything to pay for it. Your cash flow just got killed for a year. Right. And so I was able to sustain that. But looking back, I'm like, man, like, I would not want to be that guru who's dealing with the people on the back end there, you know? And so, but yes, I think everyone should invest.
Yeah.
Period. Like, I mean, I think that it's the most important thing to learn. That was the conversation I had with Becker. It turned me on to investing. It turned me on to, and I started going down crypto rabbit holes, and I started going down stock market, and I started studying investors and reading books by Steve Schwarzman and what is BlackRock doing. And it just allowed me to think differently about the world.
Yeah. What about investing? You mentioned technology, investing into technology,
mm-hmm.
like ways to invest into technology.
Yeah. So it depends. Are you talking about from like a PE standpoint? Like if you're like a minority owner, or are you talking about buying like Tesla as a stock?
Oh,
right. There's a couple different ways you can go about this.
Like, no, like as the first option, like having a minority on some sort of technology, like sure. buying maybe into startups or things like that, right?
So I think that if it's going to be done, it should only be done if you know what you're doing and you can bring value add, right? Like I think that there's a lot to be said about Hormozi's model, right? With acquisition.com, and he's buying it. He's not really buying tech startups. He's buying brick and mortar,
yeah.
but it's the same process. He knows he can come in and do value adds. Another example is Rob Dyrdek. I don't know if you know Rob Dyrdek, but he's one of my hero entrepreneurs. And he goes and invests in startups and companies like that, but he like they come to his machine. He's just not investing in random people.
Yeah.
Right. And so with that level of stuff, unless I had some level of control, it would be very difficult for me to invest unless yeah. I personally knew the founder yeah. and I created a business model out of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And you wouldn't have invested into digital marketing agencies.
No.
No. No. And again, it's like there's so like why do you say that?
It's cash flow. Mm-hmm. Digital marketing agencies are very difficult to sell. Churn is very hard to fix. It's very difficult. So we rebuilt our whole agency. By the time we were done, we were a consulting agency. We still did done for you ads, but we taught people how to pick up the phone. We taught people how to set up their office. We taught people how to walk through the office and do patient greeting. We taught them how to clean up their signs in the front. We taught them how to position every aspect of the patient experience. We taught them exactly how to run the consult. We taught the doctors how to deliver the paid exam, not what to say from a medical procedure standpoint, but how do you deliver a paid exam in a med office that allows someone to structurally get set up for a sale. And then we taught people how to run the report of findings. We taught them how to do all this stuff, right? So we basically figured out how to monetize an entire practice, every piece of it, because I realized that if I just dump leads into a practice, they're just going to light these fuckers on fire,
yeah.
you know? Cause, and then they're going to blame you for the bad leads.
Yeah.
When it's like, dude, you didn't even call them.
Yeah.
Thank God for Go High Level and being able to like really provide transparency. Our kill count on front desk is like 89.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is fires. Like, because we'll show the doctors what's going on and they're like, holy shit.
So you became a consultant for doctors after doing the...
But we did it together. So we were a consultant. We were growth partners, what we called ourselves. We were partners. Because we're like, hey, you want to come work with us? You have to be willing to do work and you have to listen to what we say. And if you do what we say, we guarantee you will make money. It was not some hidden thing. It's like, if you do what we say and you answer the phone in the way we tell you to answer it, and you run the scripts that we tell you to run, you're going to make money. Because we had built a system. One of the guys we hired is a magician. His name's Jason. Love him. He was a clinic director. And so he actually took a clinic from 500K to 18 million. And so he helped us design and consult and coach all of our doctors. And together, yeah. me and him built frameworks that these doctors could install. And if they followed them, they made money.
Mm.
You know, and so... But even then, when you're going back to the agency investing thing, it's like there, it's hard to sell agencies because it's, you know, typically it's reliant on employee labor and it's hard to sell that because there's no underlying technology very rarely. Maybe if there's a software in place. So just not something that I would necessarily invest in. However, I do believe it's a great place to, yeah. to make money.
If you were to examine the real estate investing wholesaling world and all the different type of clients that I could potentially have, as an agency, how would you ensure that you apply some of the same methods that you had as a doctor to retain them more, help mm-hmm. them more?
Yep. I'll tell you, so I know exactly what I would say here. Expectations. The only reason a client ever leaves you is because of unmet expectations. Mm-hmm. And I learned this when we were working with a client and he was in Utah and we ran a seminar, a health workshop. Basically, we get people in a room, they do a pitch, consult, close, whatever. And we got the numbers back after the health workshop and he made 5-1. And I was like, yeah, this is fucking awesome. Let's go, man. Great work. You know, you just paid us 10K and made 50. And I know what his margins were. He took home 30.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I expect 8-1 on my marketing. We're done. And I was like, are you fucking serious? And I learned in that moment that I had not set the expectations. So when anybody would come and work with us, we set the expectations. because you got marketers out there promising the world, and anyone watching this, you probably see every real estate person, easy money, do this, four-step path to this. Marketers are shouting louder and louder and louder, but no one's telling them the fucking truth.
Yeah.
And the truth is you probably suck at handling the leads. This is what we tell our doctors. Like, this is our sales process. Like, this isn't even after the onboard. We tell them you likely suck. And we usually like to prove that they suck. So what we used to do is we would actually opt into their contact forms or their ads, and they would be like, oh yeah, my front desk is amazing. And we'd be like, oh, well, why didn't they call me yesterday? You know, we've had someone who haven't followed up with them, right? Because we would just catch them in that spot. And so it's really setting the expectations is the key to any client relationship. Yeah. Because that's the only reason clients ever leave, unmet expectations.
Yeah.
And so setting the expectations, like, look, this is not, you're going to have to do work. Like, they're not magical unicorn leads. They're still going to be leads, right? And what's a qualified lead? Someone who you can get a hold of, who raises their hand and says, I have the issue that you say you can solve. From there, it's on you, right? And then what we did to provide and help them is give them everything they needed to do at every step of the way. Because doctors don't know how to sell.
Yeah.
Right. And so we really needed to teach them how to do that type of stuff. And a lot of our doctors were trying to do cash medicine, which is even more difficult because most people are trained to, you know, oh, as my insurance doesn't accept it, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So then they really had to learn how to sell.
Yeah.
So it's really setting the expectations and doing it on the sales process and being real. I think you can be real with people and they'll get it, especially if they've worked with a bunch of other marketing companies before. You just got to tell them, it's like, look, man, this can be hard. It might be 3-6 months before we see a huge return, but you stick with us for a year and be printing money like so.
What type of expectations and how do you lay out those expectations in the onboarding process?
Yeah. So first of all, we agree what a win is, right? So I know as a doctor, you basically need to make 3-1. And speaking medical, I don't know as much on the real estate side, right? But as a doctor, I know that you need to make 3-1 revenue on your return in order to make money because of overhead, et cetera, et cetera. Now, some treatments were more profitable than others. And so we agree that would be a win. It's not what we want, but it would be a win. So that's first step number one. Because if you're not okay with 3-1, then it's like, man, I'm sorry.
You're
like,
telling them that's a win.
A win. Okay. We're agreeing to that being a win on our sales demo and deck.
Okay.
Like, this is where we get started. Now, if you do our processes and you hit the leads like we tell you to hit and you do the things, then we're looking at 5-1. And we'll use examples of like average, average, good, great practices and where their ROIs are. And what we do during the sales process, we tie those to how much they follow our systems and follow what we tell them to do. Because we have spent years figuring out what the best process was in order for these guys to do it. So we lay it out and we get an agreement on it. It's like, hey, we've got Dr. Berman over here. He's been making 10-1 for 6 years. But guess what? Dr. Berman calls every single lead 7 times. And he has for years. And we do database reactivations every 90 days. He keeps his go high level up to date and he keeps his tracking set up properly. So that way we can leverage his lists and sell or reactivate his lists, things like that.
All right. So you being a business owner and you know that you had to set up proper expectations. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to apply the knowledge that you have into you, like for you to actually do the knowledge. So which expectations you know you need to have and how you know it's not going to be easy, but which expectations will you apply to your own business? And the team needs to meet that, needs to call X amount of times, needs to know like how much in return I'm gonna expect in the next few months as I'm starting my business and so on. Maybe which specific sales process will it have? Like, what are those expectations that you're gonna be putting into your own business?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So basically what I do is I work with everyone and I do this for myself as well. And we create the winning day formula. What do we need to do every single day in order to hit the results, right? I'm very big on focusing on actions versus goals. I like goals, I like targets, but all we can really control is our outcomes or our actions, sorry. We wanna do the actions that are most likely to get to the outcome we desire. Right. And so I'm very, very big on that. So we have targets, but it's all about what are our key performance actions, KPIs. We hear a lot about KPAs. We hear a lot about KPIs, indicators, numbers, metrics we need, but what are our actions we need to do on a database? So I go through with each team member, including myself. We say, at this day, we're going to do this. At this time, we're going to do this. This time, we're going to do this. Here's the expectations, number of outbound dials. Here's how often the boards need to be cleared. Right. And every single day, I'll actually go in and check. And we do end of day reports. Where basically people have to report back, here's what I did today, here's what happened, here's how many pieces of copy I wrote, here's how many calls I made, et cetera, et cetera. So it's basically, this same conversation applies to employees, like setting the expectation. Here's what we need to do. Because a lot of times people come back and business owners are like, oh, they're not doing the job. It's like, well, did you tell them exactly what they need to do? Or did you just think they were just going to come in here and just magically build their own processes? Because yeah. that's a huge mistake, especially newer businesses. And then they think, oh, all employees suck, which a lot do. But that's a whole recruiting conversation, right? So it's really just setting the winning day formula and then me going in and actually ensuring that it gets done every single day with them.
Yeah, even you'll have to have those expectation conversations with your father. Mm-hmm. Like, hey,
I have
this is yeah.
I told him this morning, like, we're here to win. Like, we're here to make money. We're gonna monetize these leads. And we're gonna do what's best for these sellers, right? We're everything obviously ethical, yeah. but you know, it is a unique dynamic because while he's been a solopreneur his whole life, right? Like, he hasn't really been on too many teams. It's always been solopreneur, and I'm pretty intense I'm normally like the nicest guy in the world, but like when it's like on a meetings, I fucking hate meetings. So when I'm on meetings, I'm like, we're going to get in, we're going to get out, we're going to do our job, and we're going to move on. Boom. Right. And I hold myself to an incredibly high standard. So I hold the people around me to high standards as
love
well.
That. Yeah. Love that. Cool, man. What do you feel like? I think we're going to have a few episodes because I'd like to know.
The journey, man. Journey. I've got to come back and actually close some deals next time. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking all this stuff, but.
So, when do you want to meet next? When do you think that we should be able to have a touch point to see where you are?
Let's do something early July.
Early July.
30 days. We're about to start dumping leads into this thing next week, as long as everything goes to fruition, which I expect that it will. And then, so yeah, let's check back in July.
Love that. Yeah. All right. So next marketing channels are going to turn on right now. And how is your sales process looking like? Where are you getting your sales process from?
Yeah. So basically, what we want to do is identify the people who actually say they're interested, right? Which is why I'm going online lead gen. Can you do it the other way? Can you cold call? 100%, right? Like I said, with cash versus not cash and time versus money, things like that. But I want people to raise their hand and say, I'm interested, especially if they're exclusive leads. From there, the goal is to get as much detail and information about them as possible. Basically, fill out an intake form. I'll learn about the property, get as much information as we can. And then we're not going to do any selling or try and pitch them any contracts or terms or anything at that point. We're just going to collect information. And the way we're approaching that is we're going to collect the information and it's an intake form or take it to the funding department, right? So we just want to find out as much as we can. I'll get back to you, right? Because we're going to promise a cash offer within 8 hours. And so then we're going to take that back. We're going to go. We're going to meet up as a team. We're going to evaluate the deal. We're going to do the ARV, the comps, the MAO, all that type of stuff. And then we're going to have my dad go back to the seller and decipher whether or not it makes sense for a cash offer. And then from there, talk to him about potentially other options if we know that a cash offer is way out of what they're expecting.
Okay, great. So first conversation is just getting as much information from the seller.
Intake. Yep. So we're not trying to sell or close right there on the spot, right? We're positioning it as, hey, we want to get as much information from you as possible.
Yeah. You already know it's going to be a two-step, three-step.
Correct.
Cold close.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Spending time with them, spend time with them and not try and hard sell them right away and just try and not put off the BS meter, right? Because there's people out there that will lock people in contracts and have no way of dispoing it and they way overextend themselves. And then if you do that, someone who's like in foreclosure, for example, and you can't get rid of it and then you have to back out of the contract and it's like a day later, that's brutal, right? Yeah. So we're just going to be trying to position ourselves differently. And I've been running a multi-step sales process for a very long time, so I'm very comfortable with that as well.
Can you tell us that quickly?
Just with doctors, basically qualifying call into discovery, discovery call into a pitch call, which is like a demo where we use a demo deck, you mean on Zoom. And with doctors, they are very unlikely to make decisions right there on the spot. They're usually more logical, methodical thinkers. So then we typically have a third call where about 50% of the deals close.
You're not going to have a pitch deck for sellers, right?
No.
All right.
We have a little something for investors so that we're going to be sending the deals out to, but no pitch deck for sellers.
Okay, cool. Yep. All right, man. It was awesome having you here, man. And
absolutely.
Thank you for giving me your time.
Of course, bro. I feel like I made it look good. You know what I mean?
Like, next time I'm just going to do this.
Yeah.
All right. So everyone that watched this episode, like I said at the beginning, before we started this, it only takes about 60 seconds for you to give us a review if you like this, if you got any value. If you're getting started in real estate, investing, wholesaling, I think this was a perfect opportunity to hear from someone that is also essentially getting started in wholesaling. From a lot of experience, he's going to apply some of that knowledge. If you already started and you saw a few of opportunities here, let us know what you liked about this episode. And we're going to have other Nick Robbins journey episodes moving forward. So I'm really excited to have like a mini. How do we call this? It's gonna be like a mini Nick Robbins show.
Yeah, the
REI show.
The journey. The journey. We can just call it the journey. Zero to. I mean. Markers, right? 0 to 100K a month in wholesaling, right? Like, how do you go from 100K. 0 to 1 million, right? Like, that's million. The plan, you know? Yeah, awesome. That's my target. I mean, I want to be doing at least that in 12 months, 100K a month.
100%. So, yeah. Love it. All right. So, guys, thank you for listening to this episode. And again, give us a review, give us a 5 stars in Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and thank you for commenting.